Jennifer Edmonds. This is a oral history report for Gary Stevens, December 1991. The interviewee is Mr. McLean. The interview is centered around topics about the earthquake of 1964 in Alaska.
We'll pick up that phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Your name is Bud Cassidy.
Right, my name is Bud Cassidy.
Okay, have you always been in Kodiak?
Well, I got here 10 days before the earthquake, so I got here just in time to see what happened.
Were you on vacation?
No, actually, I just moved here. My father had been here for 2 months, retired Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently some jobs came available in Alaska, one in Adak and one in Kodiak. He flew up to see if it was something that he really wanted to do, and then apparently he did, so he called for us and we flew up here on the 17th of March, the good Irish people that we are.
How old were you at the time?
Interestingly enough, my birthday is March 21st, so I just had turned 10. So we got here the 17th. My birthday was the 21st. I turned 10, and the earthquake was the 27th. So.
Oh, goodness.
That's a real big trauma in my life.
Oh, gosh. How many people are in your family?
There are two adults and three children, and the middle child with an older sister and a younger brother. My brother was 8 years old at the time, and my sister was 19, 20 or something. So we were the young ones in the family. My sister was a sort of responsible sub-adult.
Cool. What happened?
We were at a neighbor's house and playing. I can't remember exactly what we were doing. Because we did so many similar type things after the earthquake. The earthquake struck and the house was shaking. I remember things falling off the shelves, dishes, knickknacks, things like that. And the woman whose house we were in yelled that it was an earthquake. And I just remember, if you've ever been on a volleyball board, just kind of just standing there, kind of looking around, watching things as they fell. And again, it was new for me, even though I'd come from California and there was earthquakes here. I never felt one, but it certainly was a big one because I remember just kind of standing there, keeping my balance and watching things shake.
Yeah.
I remember it shook for a reasonably long time, but quit. I mean, there wasn't any structural damage to the house, just little things. And then it stopped. And we just picked things up. Actually, I lived across the street, so of course we had it.
Well, you were lucky, though.
Yeah, well, I think one of the remarkable things, maybe not so remarkable, one of the attributes to these Aleutian homes are the fact they're made out of cardboard and they can withstand, shakes. If you've ever lived in a conventional house with concrete foundation, you probably have some damage, but these Aleutian homes are just nothing but kind of like punch out.
Yeah, really?
The houses that you put a roof on.
I've never heard that. That's really...
They were able to withstand more shaking. I mean, they shook like crazy, but...
Yeah. But they weren't really badly destroyed.
No, I don't know of any of them that were. And of course, I was just a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah, well. Where was your house?
My house was on... We lived in Lucian Homes. It's called Borshot now. It was called North Boulevard. So we were in the heart of the Lucian Homes.
Is that over the... That's
no, that's all the ones down here. The whole valley. It'll look like houses, cracked housing. That had been here for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you didn't, no one was hurt in your family?
No one was hurt. My father, in fact, was working out on base and he had to come to town. And he tells a story about being in the dip, what was called the dip, is where the slide area is. The slide is not the slide slid. It's not as much as a dip. It used to be very pronounced to where extreme high tides the water would be flooded. But anyway, the story goes he was driving through the dip when one of the waves came in and they jumped out of the truck to climb up Pillar Mountain, mm-hmm. the inland side, and the wave came and picked up the truck, but the doors open, in fact. And when the wave receded, it put the truck back down in about the same position. They jumped in and shut the doors and continued to
climb. How about luck?
But he says that he never climbed the mountains the best in his life.
I guess not. It sounds like someone was watching out for you guys.
Yeah. What's interesting for us is that we just moved up from California. My mother was used to the suburbs and the all-electric house up in Kodiak, especially in Lucian Homes. You have a propane stove. Well, she barely knew what propane was.
Mm-hmm.
They drove from California. Certainly wasn't familiar with it. And here we were eating cereal and kind of cold foods were a fact. She had a propane stove where she could boil water. And,
mm-hmm.
and,
I don't know, I'm not too familiar with that stuff, but I would think that it would have blown up, I mean, in the middle of all this earthquake.
No, I mean, they're in cylinders, so, I mean, it's a shaking of the ground, isn't like, you're certainly not shaking on the scale of a kind of cellist, the paint can shaker. I mean, it kind of rattled, and you get sort of a rolling effect. There's an upward movement and a sideways component. Yeah, you're shaking, but it isn't. It's more of a roll, like a wave. Let's say you put your house on the ocean, you see some waves running mm-hmm. through. The tanks can withstand anything like that. I don't know what kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And they roll and bend, make copper pipe bend, so I don't know if anyone had any problems. That could be a fear, probably in some places. I would probably think that might be a fear. But, I haven't heard.
Well, are you familiar with the San Francisco earthquake?
One here, last World Series.
I don't know exactly what it was. I know it was supposed
to be. Well, there's one in 1906. Now, there was a big one in 1906 that caught fire.
Oh, I know that it was compared to this one in 1964, and it said this one was so much stronger. That was so devastating.
After World War II. Afterwards, were tremendous. I mean, they had some tremendous structural damage, and you realize that the city of San Francisco is reasonably dense when you talk about even our densest part of town, which is downtown.
Well,
so they had the fire. We didn't have, I don't know if anything caught on fire.
Well, did you go into town or see other places that were?
We did after the tidal wave, yeah. We walked downtown. Actually, you weren't allowed downtown because the National Guard had. And there was martial law at the time, I believe. And they were concerned about people looting the store. So you couldn't go downtown per se. What we did was walk along a boardwalk up on what's called High Street. And I remember looking down, and what struck me as odd was all the boats were in town, and all the houses were on the water. So it was like a big coach of a football team saying, "Ready, shift." Everything had just shifted. And what was interesting is there was little bits and pieces of the breakwater all over. You know, you know what the breakwater looks like today. It's in a straight line. Well, there was little chunks in different places, turned at different places, little segments of the boat. And generally, there was a boat or two washed on the front. I'm not sure. You know, the earthquake didn't do a whole lot of damage to town. What did the damage was the tidal wave. So we were real lucky compared to other communities. Valdez actually disappeared. It was on a big delta. The delta kind of slid away. And in fact, they relocated the town. Seward, the same thing. Kodiak, we were on solid bedrock. So when it shook, we shook. But when it stopped, we stopped. And the damage was primarily from
the tsunami.
Whereas in Anchorage, didn't get any tsunami. But because they weren't built on bedrock, they're more on, I guess the analogy would be a bowl of jello. When it shook, and when it stopped, it kept shaking.
Oh, God.
So the geology, the underlying geology of where a town is located is obviously reasonably important.
Definitely.
So when they moved to Valdez, they moved into a big blowhole. Now they're right next to a big wind funnel that blows through town. Kodiak, like I said, is just on bedrock, so. Well, I mean, Chuck, theoretically the island, not theoretically, I guess, even by determination by survey, the island sort of tilted somewhat, not with the axis in the center, but there was a portion of the island that was submerged, which is kind of this portion of the island, 5 feet, which is what they generally say at Spruce Cape.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are parts that went up as well. Usually it's further to the east. Montague Island, which is in Prince William Sound, went up something like 30 feet.
30 feet? For real?
Yeah.
Did it stay up?
Oh, yeah. No, it's still up. Yeah. Yeah, it's still up today. In fact, of course, all the kelp is gone. It was probably, it's been close to,
mm-hmm.
close to 30 years now. So I'm sure it's forested. 30-year-old trees, but certainly. That's a pretty major displacement. That was a big earthquake. In fact, everything I read said the earthquake was between 8.4 and 8.6,
mm-hmm.
and that was sort of an extrapolation based on information, sketchy information from the few seismographs that were in the state. Again, this was pretty wild and woolly. Well, you may think so now, since you're reasonably new, but let me tell you, it was a lot more wild and woolly then than it is now. Well, apparently they've gone back and did some more investigation, and I've read recently where they're putting the earthquake up to 9.4 on the Richter scale. So we're talking about a tremendous, they call them great earthquakes. In fact, it's probably great at 8.4 to 8.6, but at 9.4, it was tremendous. This is Bud. Can I call you back? So it was a big event. I actually had some effect on my... This is Bud. Good, Lou. Okay, Lou, let me have your number and I'll call you back. 3387. I need about a half hour or so. Okay. I'm still, I can put some things in the mail if you want, but I'm still sort of pulling things together. Okay, well, why don't I send you what I have, and then I can just slowly send you things. Is like, you think that's the way to do it? Okay. Yeah, I do, Lou. You bet now. Bye-bye. I went on to major in physical geography and geology, and my background, my training is in hazards geology, hazards planning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think growing up in earthquake country, having not only survived the 64 earthquake, but was a senior in high school when the mountain failed. And I remember vividly sitting there watching big boulders run down the hill.
Oh, really?
And in the ocean, I think it had some, and the commercial fishermen had seen some country. Had some effect on guiding me and what I've done with my education and what I've done with my professional life.
Yeah, I know it was really funny because we're from New York, but we just moved from Maryland, and it was like from a big city to a little country. But then even here, it's still shocking because we have all the mountains here and the snow. And I mean, a lot of people, I thought they're nuts going around this. Like to the college in the blizzard, okay, but just the landslide, the mudslide, you know, that scared me. You know, there's one road, and I heard all these.
Oh, I was thinking that was Rachel's voice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I was looking for Rachel.
I'm not sure if she's done. You want to sign that poster right there?
You want me to sign it? I'm surprised you hung it up, Bud.
Well,
has Jerome seen
it? Yeah, he has.
What do you think?
He says, well, he was coming. Do you think it's appropriate here? And I said, Jerome, I can't take it home. Take both of us to get it out of the place. My wife shoves it. It's only going to be up for the day. I actually was trying to see if my secret Santa, I can tell by the reaction of folks if they're my secret Santa or not. This is Bud. We're all wrapped up. We're wrapped up. It's a done deal. Is Yeah, surplus bucks. Oh, and I don't know if you call it surplus bucks, can be used for other school purposes, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, well done. No, we paid for it. Yeah, we're not done with the subdivision yet, but so we have, yeah, I'd say we need a bit, we've made some initial payments. We've got the major part of the subdivision, and I'd leave it $5,000 if that's not a problem. Just for anything that might come up, but the subdivision isn't a completely done deal yet. I'm still, DEC has to sign off on it. We still have to sign the plat. So we're real close. But I can't remember where I'm at.
Oh, well, I guess the biggest impact, you were talking about how you got into the skill with geology.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, the little mudslide we had here, I mean, it's, I guess you put it in perspective, it's a small event.
Compared to everything else, right?
And, yeah, and actually, it certainly doesn't look as bad in the light of day as,
no.
As it might have looked while you were peering through 8 inches of rain. Actually, probably not. I went down to eat that. I mean, it's great to live, for someone with a geologic background like me, this is a great place to live in the middle of all these catastrophes, you know, volcanoes exploding, lands.
You really like this?
Well, I mean, I guess if I was an attorney, I'd be chasing ambulances. But, you know, there's a lot to be gained by understanding these things. Yes, they happen and there's catastrophe, but I guess in my mind, isn't it more important to sort of figure out why these things happen so you can in
Even
some form try
range.
To predict them and or prevent. An example of what I'm trying to say is we have soils along the hillside here,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same soil that gave away. I mean, it's these slide prone soils. So by mapping, it's called a pyramid soil series, by mapping these mm-hmm. soils, we know where they are, number one. We know, number two, that they're prone to sliding, and then hopefully we'll know that, number three, we should build underneath those.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with tidal waves. You know, we had a big event, 64, you know where the damage was done. Common sense should say that, maybe we should build in these areas because it happened once in 64. It's a matter of when, not a matter of if. It's going to happen again. Shouldn't we learn from these things? Well, we generally don't. We generally don't because human nature being what it is, people like to live close to the ocean. So it's going to happen again, I guess.
Oh, yeah, but even if it did, you know, it's just like saying, oh, well, you should never drive a car because you've got
right.
an offender number,
that's
you
right.
know?
That's right. Yeah, you're always playing with sort of the statistical aspect of things that could happen mm-hmm. tomorrow and happen the day after tomorrow, you know, twice. And it's because they say it's 100 years. I mean, it can't happen 5 days in a row and then not happen
yeah.
again for another 500 years. But I mean, I think there's some, yes, you can address everything,
mm-hmm.
but you can increase your odds by knowing
more about
physical information about the landscape. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember skydiving, what appears to be very hazardous.
Mm-hmm.
Not occupation, but thing to do. And I remember the skydiver instructor telling me the only thing dangerous about skydiving is driving to the airport. So you're right, statistics of things happening, you know, the odds of things happening are greater than anything to do. It's going to have greater in some sense.
I'm out of tape.
Oh, no, I was going to have a great tape with all the background.
Oh. That's okay. Are those, do you know if those houses that live are Aleut homes? I mean, well, the type of homes you said? The
Aleut homes? No.
Yeah.
No. In that case, you had one of the houses, the Walters house, was on a concrete foundation, engineered,
mm-hmm.
where others were just on pilings. Hammered some piling in there until they got some resistance. So I think, yeah, you can't, you know, simply, there's an earthquake, you just can't surmise what happened by looking at it from a you know, near island, you need to go up there and you know, talk about how saturated is the soil and, you know, look at the technical aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of foundation that they have. Where did the water come? Where was the drainage in the mountainside?
Mm-hmm.
What are the percent slopes these things happen on? And, of course, that's, like I said, my training. And
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that has to go through just because I grew up in a place like Kodiak and sort of survive the tidal wave and survive the landslide and survive Friday and Saturday nights down.
How did your parents act or react? I mean, I would think they'd panic, especially
they were panicked. Yeah, my parents were. Well, I was across the street, so they didn't have any real problem. I think what was interesting is the way that Aleutian Home shook during the tidal wave is the same way that it shakes when your wash machine's on the spin cycle. I mean, it just shakes. So I think it took folks a little bit of time to realize that, number one, it was an earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big earthquake because it really did shake. And then number two, having known you lived, that you survived an earthquake,
mm-hmm.
what about everything else? I mean, there was the panic of the tidal wave. Being a fairly recent arrival to Kodiak and not knowing Kodiak is strange, the people are strange.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was a real stressful home. Living in a, having survived an earthquake is a fairly stressful time. For my parents, for kids, it was the greatest thing in the world. Especially kids from California, walking in the snow, being outside the entire time, having real neat sort of Sergeant Preston hats it was dynamite. And then even sort of the catastrophe, waiting for the tidal wave.
You guys knew it was coming.
Yeah, they had, there was some warning that there was one, or that there was a strong possibility of one or two. And the whole town, of course, was trying to run for higher ground, and the road up to Pillar Mountain was packed. You bet.
How soon after the earthquake did the tsunami come?
Oh, gosh. Well, now, the tsunami, it wasn't just one wave, it was a series of waves. So what
mm-hmm.
you got basically was, you know, a little bit of higher water, and then that would wash out, and then you had a bigger wave, and then that would wash out.
Mm-hmm.
The waves, they call it a train of waves,
mm-hmm.
battered the island all during the night. And I couldn't tell you, since I was 10 years old,
yeah.
we were rushed up to the hillside, and my mom said, "You will go to bed."
But you had enough time to get up there and everything, though.
Yeah. In fact, where we were at was perfectly fine.
Uh-huh.
It's just there was so many rumors
yeah.
about what might happen. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
This is Bud. So, reacting to rumors, and of course there's a National Defense Radio that says go to higher ground. I mean, even the
mm-hmm.
the authorities had no real sense of what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just how the tidal wave was coming.
Did you see the waves?
No, it was, of course it was in March, and the earthquake occurred at 5:30, I think, or something. Like that. So you're talking about it being pretty well
into the night.
Yeah, you know, it does get dark fairly early around
yeah.
here. So, and then also viewing it from hillside, which is quite a distance, didn't see a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, another real good interview would be with a fisherman
mm-hmm.
who might have was in the process trying to take the boat out to higher water because I hear the channel was just like a river.
Oh,
yeah. Boats running back and forth. But, hey, you know, I was just a young kid, and I was away from downtown, so I couldn't tell you exactly what.
What's the name of this fisherman?
Well, no, there's any number of fishermen.
Oh,
yeah.
You just talking about fishermen.
A fisherman who might have been taking the boat.
You know what I heard, though? I heard that with all these waves and everything, that it was washing in and out, and that it got empty, almost empty.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Again, the water comes and then it sucks it all out to make a larger wave.
Yeah.
And just think about what a smaller wave does on the beach, and just kind of magnify that, where you suck all the water out of the boat. Yeah, I heard the channel was empty, and all kinds of things. And that very well could have happened.
Do you know how far it got in town?
No, no, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I heard the boat harbor downtown was all dry.
Oh gosh, I know someone said they have a picture of one of the boats in Crafts.
Well, of course, Crafts was many stores back then.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it wasn't just one building. There was kind of the meat market, supermarket. There was another dry goods section. There's a lot of little structure called Crafts. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the biggest damages from the tidal wave was not the water so much, but was all the boats and cars and cottonwood trees that were downtown that were being swashed back and swashed, is that the word?
were being
carried back and forth with the wave, and they were battering rams. You can imagine what one cottonwood could do, smashing back and forth against buildings. Remember, this was older Kodiak with a lot of stiff built buildings, so you had a battering ram. A big cottonwood tree would probably do a fair amount of damage, kind of floating around town. And the boats, you can imagine 60-foot boats up there where what's there now? Tubbs and Tan is, or the China House.
Oh.
Well, there was a big boat right up there, so you can imagine to get to that spot, it probably did a fair amount of damage, and then cars and things like that. So a lot of the damage was done by things other than the wave, all the boats.
Yeah.
As many boats that were probably still on the boat harbor crashing through town. Probably was a pretty dramatic sighting too.
Did anything happen down at the base, do you know?
Yeah, the base had some damage from the earthquake, some cracks, some displacement in the runway, and then of course the water was reasonably high. I got some books here. Again, this being my profession, I collect things. Here we go. Here's some of the stuff on the base. Seawall was bent. This should be a good picture. See how this is where the wave went up? Here's the big hangers. Well, this is the kind of information I mentioned that we have now, so.
Mm-hmm. Is this the admin building that's by the gate?
No, that's the hangar. That's the big blue hangar. This is the water. This is where the bag building's right through here.
Okay. Yeah.
So the big blue hangar here, and the other one on the other side.
Ooh.
There's another one right now. There's that one there.
Yeah.
The government house. The dock. There you go.
Ooh.
That's the second hangar. It's the one furthest away. Here you go, here's a high water line on the desk.
Oh boy, I bet they enjoyed that.
In fact, do you guys live on base?
Yeah.
Okay, if you go down here where the power plant's at, if you pass the PAC building going out to Niemann's Peninsula, there's a big ray building on your left, with a bunch of steam pipes and stuff.
We probably passed it.
Okay, let me show you that. As you're driving. As you're driving, this is where the PAC building is located. That building right there, that's where the PAC building is located at. So if you pass the PAC building, and this is Niemann's Peninsula, you drive out to the Coast Guard cutters, there's a big gray building right here. Pass right about here.
But it's on the left now?
It's on the left, right.
Okay. That's
correct. It's on the left. There was, when I lived out there, a big line that said this is the level of the 64 earthquake, which is about 20 feet up on the. So if you drive out, I bet you're still there. It's painted in yellow. But it's on the side of the building, the power plant building.
Oh, look at the look.
Come on in here. You find me on the form.
I'm going to leave this for you, bud.
Give me another form?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get some checks.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So the base had, I mean, this was a flood. While the water gets around that, it depends on more floods. Here you go. Here's a big mooring buoy.
That's a buoy?
Yeah. I don't know how much it weighed. But the water had picked it up and
almost
the that's huge. So you can imagine the amount of water that it must have taken to pick that up.
Were there any boats in the harbor at the time? I mean the Coast Guard cutters?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. So here's the damage downtown. It's flooded.
You know it was really funny. They have, in case of tsunami,
we're supposed to evacuate to Peterson Elementary School.
Yeah.
And to me, that seems like one of the places that would get hit. It's lower than where we live.
Yeah.
This is good. I guess it's farther away from the shore and it wasn't
right.
hit last time.
Right. I think, you know, that's a part of it. We use this 100-foot contour level, 100-foot evacuation level,
mm-hmm.
a little too freely. But I guess when you're talking people's lives, it's best to err on their side of saving lives. You have places in the center of the island that could be less than 100 feet. But, yeah, you need to look at the distance away from the shore. You need to look at all kinds of characteristics. One of the reef structures out there. Because
yeah.
The wave is going to dissipate energy by going over reefs,
yeah.
depending on what stage of the tide is. At the lower the tide, the more reefs are exposed, the more the wave is going to get beat up by the reef. I mean, it's going to. There's an underwater component to a wave besides
mm-hmm.
the top, and as that underwater component gets chewed up by going through reefs or slowed down,
mm-hmm.
and the wave component above the surface tends to.
So
fall over on itself, yeah. So, yeah, Peterson didn't get hit. Peterson's under 100 feet. In fact, it's probably well under 100 feet, but it's inland. And I always tell folks to look at where the damage was during the 64 earthquake and tidal wave, because that was a major 9.4.
Mm-hmm.
And from everything I've read, the next earthquake is supposed to occur along the same fault. Generate about the same size wave. The only question is, how much will the island tilt again? You know, if it,
mm-hmm.
if it tilts 100 feet, you know, being 100 feet, yeah. Or if it's at a high tide or low tide, it's going to do. I mean, I think the variation in tides is about 11 feet between high tide and low tide around here, 11, 15, or something like that. So, I mean, if it happens at 5 feet or in high tide, you're going to have additional damage. If it happens at low tide, you're going to have less damage. So,
you guys anticipated when?
Well, I mean, that's something that is tough to determine. I mean, that's what the U.S. Geological Survey, probably many geophysical
research labs,
yeah, are trying to determine. I mean, there are some indications. I mean, animals was always one. Apparently, animals have a sixth sense. Tell if something's happening. Apparently, the magnetic back a little bit. The Earth tends to bulge regionally. You're not
mm-hmm.
going to find a bump, but you won't be able to tell it on the small scale. But apparently, there's a bulge in the Earth where the pressure is building up, and you can't really tell it, but you can tell it when you fly over it measures the magnetic. Intensity of the location. Apparently that changes a lot. Water wells change in depth. The water goes down. There are different indications about, they think, are indicators for the next tidal wave. But when I was in school, there was a place called Palmdale, California, outside Pasadena, that exhibited all these characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And they swore up and down that, boy, this is going to be the site of the next great earthquake. And it hasn't happened yet. Other places that didn't exhibit any of those characteristics have had earthquakes. So it's still a new science. Earthquake prediction is a little tough to do, and they're still trying to determine.
Let me ask you a really far-fetched question here. Do you have any theories about Atlantis?
Well, I mean, could it in fact have existed in
some
sort?
If it sunk, do you think it could have been from like this big deal here?
Well, generally, talk a little about geology. Generally, things in geologic time happen real slowly.
Mm-hmm.
We have like mound building process, Mount McKinley.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about subduction zones where a portion of the earth is subsiding underneath another. But all these things happen on like 2 centimeters a year, or like the moon is getting further away from us at a certain rate. Well, usually geologic processes are such that they happen real slow, they just happen over time. Like the theory of all continents being together and slowly moving apart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't move apart in great leaps and bounds, they moved apart centimeters per year. I mean, just that.
So even if they had been there at one point,
sure.
the people wouldn't have known
sure.
by the time it was.
Well, another example is, there have been mountains higher than Mount Everest had been worn down by erosion down to a flat plain. Mm-hmm. It's probably happened many times. Yeah. But it's just hard for us to fathom if you don't think in geologic terms. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of millions of years. So for something like Atlantis to happen, it's hard to say. Probably that's a great Jules Verne sort of notion. I guess, on one hand, I'll say no, because things happen slowly. You just don't disappear. But we've had events. Montague Island went up 30 feet in one event. I mean, that is dramatic motion in anyone's book. So, and Anchorage had places that subsided quickly, but certainly not like Atlantis, where the whole thing subsides. I mean, or if that's what I understand you to say, it was just swallowed up. And,
right.
Yeah, it's hard to see. I mean, I would think it makes for a good story. I mean, there's other things related, like were they an advanced civilization? Or that makes for good reading, good debate.
Yeah. Do you know if Menashka Bay and the other side of the island and everything was affected?
Of course, the village of Mafognak, which is right over here, had subsided enough to where water was coming into. Right there, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Water was coming into the town. They actually moved the town over to Port Lyons. Which is right there. So that town was actually abandoned. Yuzinki, I don't know what happened in Yuzinki. They had some flooding. As far as damage, again, this you're talking about. Talking about small towns that may have had some damage, but even Kodiak, I mean, where we rebuilt.
How long did it take to rebuild this building?
Took a long time, because what they did with downtown is actually take a lot of rock from the slide area before they recognized it as a slide area to build up downtown. Remember, it had subsided, so they built it back up with fill. And the fill came from the toe of what has become the landslide.
Oh, that's scary.
So they actually came into town. Mm-hmm. I always say that urban renewal, that's what they call it, it's a federal program, did more damage than the earthquake and tidal wave. Because whatever cottonwood trees were left were just mowed down. Everything was just, you know, like the, just like taking a eraser and erasing the slate clean. They just started from scratch. And we created a town on this kind of flat area that we call downtown, the drainage systems, the number of things. So, remember I talked about earthquakes happening on solid rock and earthquakes happening on loose rock, which acts like jello. So that, the town is...
going to be jello if it happens again.
Yeah, it's going to be... We'll see more types of things happen downtown.
Yeah.
But that was where, you know, property values were at. That's where the boat harbor was located. We were a much smaller town back then. So, you know, we didn't have all the town was probably no further this way than just up the head of the Lucian Homes. I mean, there was hardly anything else. There was a few things on Spruce Cape, but you're talking about a very tiny town back then. So what has happened is now that it's been 30 years or so, not quite 30 years, since it's happened, that we have forgotten the lessons of the past. And we can forget the lessons of the past, forget history, bound to repeat themselves. So we'll see. We'll see major damage again, even more so for the next earthquake.
There's some hope I'm not here.
Well, there's, if you have a geology point of view, you'd like to be here.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm hoping to do when it does happen is get in an airplane and sort of map again. We have, through photographs, we have some mapping of where the damage occurred. And like I said, we've ignored it more. We didn't recognize them for what they were.
I have a question. Now, this might sound really stupid. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I heard that the windows in Anchorage were shattered and things like that, and places all the way far off in California and Seattle affected. Would if that can affect the windows, you know, so many miles away and stuff, would it affect someone being up in a plane just right above it while it's going on?
Well, let me back up and say the windows were affected in Anchorage because you had the building shaking. Remember, it's a jello effect, and the building was stretching as it was tilting. Of course, the windows snapped.
Oh, it got.
It wasn't a loud boom that made it snapped. If that's what you thought. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just the building shaking that was.
Okay, I
and
didn't.
And the damage that occurred down in Crescent City, you know, the tidal wave lapped up on the shores of Antarctica. I mean, that's the, and people died in Crescent City, California. So that was the tidal wave. So you got to separate the earthquake from the tidal wave, and then find out. Again, it's no different than the slide era. Well, why did it happen? Well, in Anchorage, we had some major displacement where buildings were parts of the building shifted differently relative to other parts of the building because of that.
There's a picture that's really popular. It has half a highway that was like just half the road, and the stores were just down.
Yeah.
And you know that happened. It was in D.C. or New York just last year, but it wasn't an earthquake or something because it was in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
My dad works up there, and we were watching the news, and it was one of those nights. Of course, he had to be working late.
Yeah.
And a whole building and part of a highway for so many blocks, it just collapsed, completely, totally collapsed.
Sure.
Like, and it was in shock, you know. Like, I was thinking it wasn't that bad, but they showed the rest of it around it, and it was really odd.
Well, that could have been just a design or something. Like
yeah.
That. Structurally, there wasn't the integrity
that's how they
there.
To, it
off. Yeah, I mean, so things like that happen, but I guess you can't take a point of view about boy. Sure glad I'm not here when that happened. It's why did it happen? Or is there, I mean, there's a lot of mistakes made at all levels.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently whoever signed off on that bridge or whoever decided what metal to use or, holy moly, what are you doing? You scared the heck out of me. Come here, Dale. What are you doing here, huh? In fact, we had a dog just like this during the tidal wave. Runner.
Really? Whose dog is this?
I don't know. So you got to understand the processes, and I guess that's what been my interest.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my papers during the school were on the Alaska earthquake. You know, what caused the tidal wave? What direction did it come from? It's understanding to help number one predict,
mm-hmm.
number two to plan for people who live in that area, choose to live in that area, how to better survive, I guess. Because there are some common sense things that you do. I think the town moving up to Upper Mill Bay is a good thing.
Yeah.
We've got our sort of fishing section downtown,
mm-hmm.
but safety-wise, people shouldn't be living in tidal wave.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of prone areas that should be living up at least 100 feet or something like that. That's why I bought some property. It wasn't on the ocean. There was ocean property available when I bought it. I bought it on a lake. And I've got a gorgeous view of the lake, the ocean, which is sure breathtaking. But you know, at least when it comes time for a tidal wave and evacuation, I got a big coffee pot that I set up, and I tell people just come to my house, bring your bottle of Bailey's, we'll drink Bailey's and coffee all night long. So, I'm perfectly safe. I don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, as many things we have to worry about around here. Mudslides, the wind blowing trees over on your house.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to be able to sleep through the night and say, I'm not going to worry about these things. I'm not going to worry about tidal waves. Or, I can sleep all night long. Like the other people worry about. I'm not going to worry about it. I'll worry about the dam collapsing due to the amount of rain we had.
Yeah. How did your brother, and you said you have a sister also, right?
Yeah, my sister was 19 years old. She was in the closet for 2 weeks. I mean, and the reason was we just come from Southern California. She was 19 years old. My father, being the strict Irishman that he was, just wasn't quite ready to let my sister kind of go off on her own and do what she wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So after being 19 and living on the beaches of California, and then having to come to Kodiak, it was more than a mild shock for my sister. So I think her way of coping with it was to go live in the closet for 2 weeks, and the earthquake didn't help anything.
Yeah.
My mother's from Boston, Massachusetts. I mean, this was all my dad's idea, and what the heck was he doing bringing her and her family up here in this place with Kodiak Bear and
cold.
They're not so big now, but parkas, fur parkas, mm-hmm. were real big. When we first got up here, I remember my mom and dad making a pact that My dad would buy my mom a parka if she would stay for 5 years. Well, they stayed for 25 years or something like that. So he still was her former parka. Do that. My sister married a local boy and they live in Anchorage now. My brother lives in Anchorage. So we all still live in Alaska. Except for my parents live in Arizona.
It sounds like it all worked out.
I'll be one of the few folks to be able to say that I've lived through two earthquakes and tidal waves in my life.
Really? Is that just one? Two?
Oh, I think the other one is probably overdue. The next one.
Oh.
Actually, what they call return rates for these types of earthquakes are anywhere from every 30 years to every 60 years or something. We're now coming up on 30 years, but that's an average. Like I said, it can happen 5 times in a row and not happen again for another, whatever, 500 years, and we still meet our one every 100 year average or something like that. So it's gonna happen. I mean, I think you just need to be prepared for it.
Well, it sounds like you're well prepared.
Well, I like to think I am, but there's always something to do.
Maybe just a little
thing. I don't have my little Honda generator or something. Heat up my coffee or something. Because we lost power, we had to boil water.
Mm-hmm.
I think the water and sewer lines were questionable, but we've got more infrastructure now. We've got a sewer treatment plant in tidal wave zone. We've got a lot of utility lines in tidal wave zone.
Mm-hmm.
KEA is just now moving out of tidal wave zone up to Pillar Mountain. The city hall was located downtown. It's now up here. So we've come a long way. Rachel's not available. Is Marcella? No. Oh, hi, Linda. Yes, she is. She's just away from her desk. We'll do. Repeat that in a minute. 4, 6, 4, 9. We'll do it. Wait a minute. Yeah, we'll see. I think there's always new things to learn. This isn't Kodiak of 64, so there'll be new. I guess what I hate to see is the earthquake trigger the landslide, trigger smaller slides.
Yeah.
We have a pretty good system in place now. Hopefully we can use it, but we still, sort of our emergency services.